game show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Is my creation! Life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well now, good afternoon, everybody. How you doing today? Here we are on a bright, sunny, cold Tuesday here in Southwest Florida. Yes, indeed. It got down to low 40s last night. Highly unusual for this time of year, but nonetheless a beautiful day. Very, very beautiful day. A little windy, but sunny, and nice to have something different for a change, and I hope it's nice where you are as well. Got a great show planned for you today. We've got Heather Walkush with us today. She's going to talk to us about how she thinks the Democrats are being set up for the 2008 election. She's got some ominous things to talk about there, and that's going to be at the bottom of this hour. At the top of the next hour, we're going to have Dave McMichael, and some of you will remember Dave, been on the program a couple of times. He's a former analyst for the CIA, and he's a member of the steering committee of the Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, which, as you well know, has scrutinized Bush administration's claims regarding Iraqi weapons of mass destruction. And he's also written an article called Crisis Over Iran, Can It Be Defused? And as you know, we're hearing the drumbeat start. All the crazy people who were in on starting the last war are certainly beating the drums on this one. Seems like it didn't slow them down a bit, did it? Oh, no. Hell no. They were wrong with everything in the world that possibly could be go wrong with the Iraq war, and yet it hasn't slowed them down a bit. And going for another one. It's amazing to me how people like Bill Kristol and Richard Pearl and Cheney and Douglas Feith and all those folks can sit around saying, yeah, let's go bomb Iran, you know. This one, the Iraq war turned out so damn good, let's just go do it again. These people are nuts. Need to be locked up, some of them. Put away with those little white coats with the padded cells and all of that, because there is something definitely wrong with them. I feel good today. Yes, I do. And you know why, some of you. And I'm going to talk a little bit of football here for about 1 minute. My beloved Ohio State Buckeyes defeated those nasty Michigan Wolverines 42-39 and earned themselves a spot in the national championship game. I knew they would. They did. It was a great game. It was a credit to college football. And I could not be happier that my Buckeyes are in the national championship game in Phoenix, Arizona. So now all they have to do is sit around and wait for a couple of weeks to find out who the BCS is going to pair them with. Is it going to be Southern Cal? If they win out, it looks like it'll be Southern Cal. If Southern Cal doesn't win out, it'll most likely be Michigan. We'll have to see. Ah, yes, we did it. Wonderful day. The stadium was packed. The band was great. Everything was wonderful. And damn, I feel good. It'll last for a while. It'll last for a couple of months. It always does after you beat those scoundrels from up north, as Woody used to call them. And also, I must say, when we get beat by those scoundrels up north, feeling of despair lasts for a couple of months. And now that I've said how crazy I am over college football, well, Anyway, ELO and I, we love our Buckeyes, and I know there's lots of Buckeye fans and lots of Meat Chicken fans listening too, so sorry, gang. Sorry about your luck. Had a good time all weekend with that. I really did. And so, I am in a good mood today. Hey, are we suffering a post-election letdown, do you think? I've noticed that ratings are down all over the place on the TV, political TV shows and political radio shows, and in ours as well. I'm just wondering, you know, is everybody taking a break? Is it just because it's Thanksgiving week? Is that it? And normally that's a slow week for a lot of things, except the grocery stores. My God, I went to the grocery store last night. I thought it was... Well, around here, the time you don't want to go to the grocery store is when you're predicting a hurricane. And thank God hurricane season's over with, or just about anyway. I forget the actual date. But you don't want to go to the grocery store then because it's like every man for himself. You can't get near the front door usually. People lining up to buy water and batteries and bread and cigarettes and I don't know what all. But that's what it looked like last night. Man, couldn't get near the grocery store. It was amazing. But here we are coming up on Thanksgiving. I do want to let everybody know that we'll be live today. And tomorrow we are going to take Thanksgiving Day off, going over to our dear friends, taking the whole family, taking the puppy dogs and Bess and I, and we'll be going over to our dear friends Gene and Elaine's place for a good Thanksgiving dinner. Should be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it. And I know many of you are looking forward to getting together with loved ones and friends on Thanksgiving as well. Ray, thank you. Ray lets me know that, you know, here I live here and he doesn't, but he knows when, hurricane season's over. It's over with on November the 30th. We have lucked out this year, and it looks like we're going to luck out for the rest of the month. There's nothing happening, and, temperatures are dropping. So we are safe for this year, and the insurance companies made it through the year, jacking everybody's insurance rates, double, triple, quadruple, quintuple, whatever they could get away with, and made massive, massive profits this year. But the first time they have to pay out a little bit, why, they'll be trying to get those rates raised again. Thank you to Mr. Jeb Bush and his wonderful administration for allowing the insurance companies to rape and pillage the citizens of Florida. Thank you, Mr. Jeb Bush, oh wondrous governor of ours, oh brother of the president, rightful heir to the throne. Yes, I said rightful heir to the throne. I'm looking for something somebody sent me here. And, of course, I can't find it. I'm so unorganized. I really am. It's amazing. You wouldn't believe it. I've got a stack of stuff sitting here in front of me. Well, anyway, it was predicting that Jebby Bush... Yeah, here it is. Here it is. It's from our good friend Juanita that listens to the program every day, talking about how Jebby Bush is going to run for president. Said he wasn't going to run for president in 2008. He said, so let's get this out of the way right up front. This author says, Vince Williams, since when does a party's darling who plays hard to get, if drafted to run, blah, blah, blah. Therefore, it says Jeb will be the GOP candidate with one very important caveat. The entire political landscape changes, rendering Jeb ineligible. If George W. is indicted or impeached, well, of course. I'm saying, and I think I did mention it on the program, I'm saying that Bush Jr. here, our beloved GW, has put such a stain on the political landscape that I don't think the Bush family will ever recover their standing in the political community. What do you think? I wonder. Maybe I'm being optimistic on that, but I cannot imagine. After seeing how Bush 41 floundered and failed as a president, and then Junior Bush goes to Texas and leaves that place in ruins financially, and then comes to the presidency and leaves the whole nation in ruins and Iraq in ruins. Hard to believe that another Bush could get elected to anything. But never underestimate the stupidity of people on the right, is what I always say. As stupid as they are sometimes, as crazy as they are, as blinded by their crazy neocon ideology, never count them out for being dumb enough to elect another Bush. Why, hell, even Neil could get elected with some of those folks, right? All you have to do is say your name is Bush and people throw money at you and want to elect you to offices. Oh, they've done it all. They've helped the Nazis. They've broken savings and loans and cost the taxpayers billions of dollars. They've cost American soldiers thousands of lives. They've sold untold jobs, sent them overseas. I don't know how much more of a success a family could be than this Bush family. Do you? Oh, well, I guess I shouldn't get started on that, or I'll take all day talking about it. Love to hear from you today, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. You do need to call today. You seriously do. I'm going to talk a little bit about Iran today with our guest, like I said, at the bottom of the hour. Heather Walker, she's going to be calling us. She's someplace in Europe today. Odd-looking phone number here. Anyway, just going over a few little notes here that really don't mean too much. What did you think of Kramer? Normally we don't talk about showbiz on this thing, but you know, I was a Seinfeld fan. I loved that show. Loved that show. And man, I wouldn't have thought. Of course, I don't know the man. Who knows? He's an actor. That was some diatribe he went off on up out there on the stage in L.A. Man, I've never seen anybody go off quite like that. It'd have been interesting to see if the hecklers would have been down close to the stage. If it would have turned physical, I'd rather imagine that it would. Would have. Mm. And those of you who are younger than... well, first, let's mention this. How did you like those pictures of Junior Bush dressed up in those snazzy clothes? First, we saw that picture of him and Pooty Poot wearing some kind of a floor rug with a hole cut in it for, you know, that was wild enough. And then he comes out wearing some, I guess you could best describe it as some blue silk curtains with polka dots on them. I guess that's the closest thing you could say. Don't you get to tell your host that, no, I'm not wearing that thing, no matter what you say, I'm not putting that on, don't you? Ooh. I don't know. I don't know if I'd want to do that. I don't know why they do it. I certainly wouldn't do it. No, sir. If I'm the President of the United States, I say, I'll wear my own clothes, thank you. I'm not going to dress up and look like some wacko. My apologies to everybody who wears those clothes every single day and thinks they're perfectly normal, but never mind. All right, all of you who are, say, younger than 39 or so, I don't know where they'd put the age on this, but how about that Charlie Rangel? Does he have a point when he talks about reinstating the draft? Do you think he really wants to reinstate the draft, or is he trying to make a big political point like he was here a while back, talking about how only a very few bear the cost of this war in blood? The whole nation is bearing the cost in treasure. But a very small, very, very, very small group of people are bearing the cost in lives and blood to their loved ones. So, Charlie is bringing up this about the draft. Is he serious? Or is he just trying to pound home that point once again that the recruiters head for the highest unemployed areas and the poorest areas when they go out and do their recruiting, and that they bear a unbalanced part of the responsibility in the military? Oh, well, this is a volunteer army. Everybody in there volunteered, yeah? Some of them didn't have a choice. Yes, they volunteered. They signed their name on the line. They listened to the story the recruiters told them. And they signed up, and they willingly did so. And that's all right. But you don't see them going and hanging out on the campuses of Yale and Harvard now, do you? No, you do not. You look at the deaths week in and week out, and you see, and the pictures of them, a disproportionate number of blacks and Hispanics. Check it out next time you see the pictures. You'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Dennis Prager had it written down here. Why did I write Dennis Prager? Oh, I know. Dennis Prager, being the ass that he is, somebody that flipped on a dime overnight here just a couple of years ago when he found out it was more profitable to be a right-wing talk show host than it was to be a fairly innocuous, level-headed, middle-of-the-road political hack. No, he saw where the money was, and he turned into being a right-wing freak like the rest of them. But anyway, Dennis Prager, whom I used to think was a fairly reasonable man, I heard him complaining today. Guy, what are you doing listening to Dennis Prager show? All right, someone sent me an audio of this, okay? That's how I happened to hear it. I would never, you know. Representative Ellison from Minnesota is a Muslim, first Muslim elected to the United States Congress. He wants to take the oath of office with his hand on the Quran. Well, he is a Muslim, is he not? And that is his book of faith, is it not? And since that is his faith, and he swears an oath, he has his hand on the faith, on the book of faith that means the most to him. That is the book he should have his hand on. Do you not think so? Why do they have the hand on a religious book? That's to affirm the fact that you're telling the truth, that you would not lie before God and everybody. And if he is a Muslim, he has every right to take the oath of office with his hand on the Quran, in my opinion. In my opinion. I don't care what book you want to take it on, put your hand on. If you're a Christian, you want to have it on the Bible, fine. If that's the book that means most of you in your most to you in your life, as far as your moral values are concerned, that's the book you take the oath of office on. Prager, what the hell is the matter with you saying that a Muslim ought to have to take the oath of office with his hand on a Bible? What is wrong with you? Absolutely ridiculous. A ridiculous notion. I got to tell you, I just thought that's absurd. And to clear up a point, oh boy, did I get some nice email last week when I mentioned that the Republicans were obviously, by and large, that the party was far more. Well, I'll just use the word. I would say far more bigots and racist in the Republican Party than there are in the Democrat Party, without a doubt. And lest you think I'm not correct, let me just let you know this off from the Columbus Dispatch. Is reading a story today. I'm glad they finally narrowed it down for me. I was looking for the numbers. In the United States Congress, in the 110th Congress of the United States, when it convenes in January, at least 4 black lawmakers will lead committees in the House, and 17 will run subcommittees. There are 42 black representatives and 1 black senator, all Democrats, that'll now join the legislative session. You want to know, after we went through this latest election with race being an issue in this country and there were some black Republican candidates running, you want to know how well the Republicans back their black candidates? Do you want to know how many are in Congress? How many are in the House? Zero. How many are in the Senate? Zero. How many are ahead of any? Well, they don't have any now, do they? What a fine party. What a fine party talking about. I laugh when I hear them talk about their big tent. They've got a very small silk tent with a very few elitists in it. I love it when they talk about Democrats being elitist. Who the hell do they think they're kidding? Who do they think they're kidding? I find it extremely, it's just funny. It is. They ran some ads. The Republicans did during the election campaign. Black lawmakers said they resented Republican ads that warned of the consequences of Representative John Conyers from becoming chairman. You remember those ads. Oh, do you want John Conyers? Do you want Charlie Rangel? Do you to be ahead of these committees? You know, the voting public outright rejected that. They rejected it, and Ed Patru, a spokesman for the National Republican Congressional Committee, said the ads targeted Conyers, Rangel, and others because of their liberal policies, not their race. Oh, sure. We all believe that, don't we? Hmm? We all believe that. Yes, that's right. I just brought that up because I wanted to point out to several of you who sent emails, and you know who you are. I don't want to say Republican friends, but I got received some nasty emails complaining that I called their party, that party, a party filled with racists and bigots. I stand by what I said. I definitely stand by what I said. Talking about the draft, I got an email today. I didn't get his permission, so I won't say one of our listeners sent this, and he'll know who's I'm talking about here. But I didn't get his permission to read his email on the list. He said, "Guy, this idea of Charlie Rangel's to institute a draft is political suicide. I understand it's an effort to get a discussion on the table about Iraq and shared burden, etc. But this is dangerous because of the perception it creates with the newly controlled Congress in January. The general public will see this as the Dems want to stay in Iraq and will give the Republicans the perfect opportunity to spin it as the right now wanting out. This could be so disastrous leading up to the 08 presidential election. Nancy Pelosi is very wise to put a lid on this horrible idea." Well, we shall see. I do think Charlie's trying to make the bigger point. If he is not, I also will bring up the fact that if our governmental leaders get us into these military problems all over the globe, we're running out of soldiers. We don't have enough people to do it. Is it fair to those that are in the National Guard right now, people who've joined to be doing 4 and 5 tours of duty in Iraq? Do we not need more soldiers? There are many who say we do. If we do, they're not obviously not joining. They're not volunteering. How else will we get those soldiers? Just something to try and kind of digest there and see where you stand on it. It would, without question, make some of our leaders think twice about sending their own kids in. But then again, on the other hand, it seemed like the rich always found a way out. I'm not claiming to know what the answer is to that. My God, it's a big problem, and I truly do not know the answer to that problem. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I see our good friend Henry Kissinger doesn't have a solution to this war. A lot of folks thought that since we had a vote there a couple of weeks ago that was going to solve everything. It is not. Yeah, like I said, Kissinger doesn't have a solution. James Baker can't come up with anything. Dick Cheney would happily kill thousands more American troops for another 30 years, and he will never admit he's a corporate whore and a bloodthirsty killer. You know he won't. Charlie Rangel's draft everyone approach didn't work last century, and it probably won't do anything now unless all the rich kid deferments end. And generals are going to offer ways to try and salvage anything they can from the chaos, but anything won't include victory. This is an unwinnable war. I think we had the venerable Henry Kissinger just say so, that we cannot win this war militarily, and it won't make Americans safer. And it'll only make the politicians responsible look a little less stupid. The answer is to get out now. Now. And to relearn when war would be an appropriate course. And how to avoid the propaganda of politicians who are so many times, most of the time, far too ready to spill blood for all the false reasons. But here's the point I wanted to bring up about this. It's up to us once again. Yes, we had a vote a couple of weeks ago. Yes, we're happy that we won. We've got control of the House now and the Senate. But you and I are going to have to tell our representatives what we want and tell them often. We're going to have to tell them over and over again. And if they won't listen, well, you know, there's always civil disobedience. During Vietnam, things got pretty testy out on the streets. It might take that again. And don't back off. That's real democracy. That's what it's going to take. And, you know, we don't do it because the other side is superior militarily. We don't do it out of fear of more death. We do it because it's the only right way forward. And Iraqis will have to make similar decisions. We'll have to get out of the way and let them choose what they want. And none of this is going to be easy. It's never as easy as just going to the polls. But it's simply what we've got to do. We've got to stay after our elected officials. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Heather Vokush calling you.
Hi, well, okay. We were on live here, didn't go to a break. So, hi, Heather, it's good to have you with us today.
It was good to talk to you. It's nice to be here. Thank you.
Well, I should tell all of our listeners that my failure to go to a break on time, I got carried away talking. So anyway, here we are. We've got Heather with us, and we let you know she was going to be with us at 3:25. You know, I must admit, I wasn't even looking at the clock. That's how being a talk show host is sometimes. You get to blathering
you know,
on, you know.
This thing is very important. we can go right ahead and go to a break. This is fine. And then whatever you want.
What I was saying was important to me, you know.
that's important to the country, isn't it?
Well,
yeah.
we hope so. And we were talking about the draft and all that. And, of course, that can segue right into what we want to talk about with you, is how the Republicans could win it all back in 2008. And I ask you to come on today because I read your recent article about that, and I have to say, some of this you were writing for me because I most certainly am very wary and very cynical, and I think it's entirely possible. I think you say somewhere in the article, I don't want to put words in your mouth about possibly being set up here in 2008, and it appears to me that definitely could happen.
Oh, I think we definitely were set up, quite frankly. I mean, for me, I got really suspicious when that whole Mark Foley scandal broke right before the election. So many things had been going on, you know, as I mentioned in the book, you know, Bob Woodward's book, and then these intelligence estimates, and it really seemed to a certain extent that the Republicans were almost in certain ways trying to lose, or at least not to win as much. And so anyway, the bottom line, I mean, I've got absolutely no doubt, of course, that the nation wanted the Democrats in, and I also have no doubt that there really were very big, you know, election scandals and corruption that took place in 2006. I think the Democrats would have won much more had there not been. But my fear is that now that the Democrats are in, that they're going to be pinned with blame for a lot of these things that the Republicans did. And, I mean, how convenient is that going to be in 2008?
Well, if you think that that's the case, and I've been trying to reason this out as well, are they planning on then keeping the whole shebang in 2008? They're going to take the House and the Senate back and win the presidency too? Obviously, that's what you think they're up to. Would they really go so far as to gamble the loss of the House and Senate in order just for a couple of years in order to get it all back?
Well, really, how much did they lose? I mean, in the Senate, you need 60 votes to pass really controversial bills. I think they knew that they wouldn't have that. So what they've got is, you know, a couple years of you know, gridlock, basically. But you also have these really crucial years. I mean, 2006 to 2008, this really does not look good for the economy. The economy, the numbers coming out that you know, reflect the U.S. economy are very, very worrisome for the next 2 years. Now, who's going to be blamed for that? It's going to be the people who are, you know, in Congress right now. And also you've got to look at, you know, the issue that you were just talking about, which I couldn't agree with you more, about what is going on in Iraq. We cannot assume that the Democrats somehow, of course, you know, as a bloc won out of Iraq. As I mentioned in the article, we've got Tom Lantos, who's going to be, you know, taking over for he's the incoming chairman of the House International Relations Committee. This guy is very much a hawk. He's brilliant on almost every other issue, but regarding foreign policy, he's absolutely a hawk. And then you've got, of course, you know, the whole thing with Mirtha losing as House Majority Leader. So it's safe to say that the Democrats are very conflicted on the whole issue of Iraq, and they can be pinned with that in 2008. If there's an attack on Iran, my God, I hope not. Well, if the Democrats support that, they'll be pinned with that too. So I think that we really have to tread very, very carefully right now.
Well, as far as the war is concerned, I think we're in a, politically, if we don't play our cards right here, we're in a no-win situation. If we pull everybody out right now and it turns into chaos, or relatively soon at least, within the next few months, there is going to be chaos there. I think everybody knows it. The problem is there's chaos now. I don't know how much worse it can get. But if we pull them out, we're going to be talking, we're going to be hearing cut and run for the next 50 years. And if we leave them there, you're exactly right. When 2008 rolls around, or that the election immediately, during that season, everybody's in the Republican side is going to say, hey, what, thought they said they were going to end this war, thought they were going to do this, and thought they were going to do that. And as everybody knows, the wheels turn pretty slowly in Congress sometimes. And it's going to be hard to bring this train to a standstill, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And, I read an interesting study. It was from a British think tank, and it was just released, and they said, regardless of what happens now in Iraq, if the U.S. troops stay or if they go, if NATO stays or goes, they're looking at 30 years that this is going to be absolute chaos and conflict. 30 years, regardless of what happens. So it clearly is not only Henry Kissinger. It's just this is chaos that's going on there. And the longer that, the Democrats support our troops being there, the longer that they will be blamed for the inevitable deaths and destruction that result.
Well, you're exactly right. The world, the idea of trying to go over there and plant democracy is absurd. When you go back and look through history, we had a few of the Greek cities way back when had actual democracies, but until this country was started in 1776, there were no real democracies on this earth, not of an actual nation state. Now, I forget how many countries it is, but at least 135 or something like that are democracies in this nation, in this planet anyway. And it came because they looked at our democracy, they learned from it, and they gradually grew into being a democracy. At no time that I can think of did anybody go plant democracy someplace and say it was going to grow. It just hasn't worked, and it won't work there either.
Well, that's a really good point. And also, I think we have to consider how much our own democracy has taken a huge hit because of these never-ending wars. I mean, we've got the Patriot Act, we've got this recent, the Military Commissions Act. The line between who the enemy is and U.S. citizens has really become very thin. Another thing, though, speaking about the democracy that has me very concerned about this last election, is our own voting system really lacks integrity. I mean, we have really serious problems between the electronic voting machines and the number of citizens that are unfairly disenfranchised, what have you. And my big fear is that the Democrats are going to say, okay, well, we won, and so we don't need to look at that stuff anymore. And that will really help them in 2008 when the Republicans who own, many of these companies will have the ability, just, free rein to pull what they want.
Well, it appears right here in Florida we've got an almost definite case of it right now. I'm not saying it was necessarily hanky-panky. It might have been voter machine failure. But the issue with Christine Jennings and her race up in the Sarasota and St. Petersburg and that area up there with the 18,000, literally 18,000, an undervote, which just is, she won one of the counties easily. And yet they're going to swear in the Republican. But the whole thing stinks to high heaven.
Yeah, and when you consider the fact that 80% of Americans voted electronically in the last election, and often with absolutely no means of verification. What you just mentioned was repeated across the country. An interesting thing, I'm originally from California, and over 10,000, I don't know if you heard this, 10,000 pre-programmed Diebold touchscreen voting machines for all of San Diego County, that's huge, were just sent to the homes of temporary poll workers for storage. And these machines can be hacked in less than a minute. I mean, so the oversight of these machines is absolutely is non-existent, and I'm concerned that I think it's really imperative that Americans sit on their Congress people to get, investigations and hearings into many, many things, one of which should be voting integrity.
Well, if to go along with your way of thinking that we may be experiencing a setup here for 2008. All right, they didn't fight as hard as they might have. They didn't rig any machines maybe this time because they thought they were being watched a little more carefully, or they couldn't get away with massive fraud. It really would have had to have been very massive this time for them to keep the House, at least the Senate not so much so. If that's an indictment of the voting system, it was... I'm trying to think how I want to say this. Actually, what it boils down to is it was very quiet. I mean, activists like you, me, Brad Friedman, people like that, and many of our listeners are certainly aware of some anomalies in the voting system around the country. We're aware of it, but I would say the general public, the generally uninformed public, doesn't know squat about it, to put it in realistic terms. Nor do they care.
Oh, I would entirely agree, and I think that's a big, yet another big problem with the media. I mean, clearly that isn't reporting these kinds of things. But what's even more concerning is that the people who are in our Congress now don't seem to be very concerned about it either. And it makes you wonder if they are just, they've kind of been lulled into sleep because the Democrats happen to win this time. And that's really a concern. That's a very big concern. Not only these election machines, but again, you know, the systemic disenfranchisement of minorities, you know, specifically African Americans, for example. That's a crime. We really need to be looking at this.
So you really think, that if we're being set up, that the Republicans are really planning on riding in on the proverbial big white horse in 2008, and are just planning on having a massive retaking of the House, the Senate, and the presidency. You think they were willing to just sacrifice a couple of years for that?
Well, I mean, quite frankly, I don't think that they had the. I don't think that they had the option to kind of slide through very easily, because it was such a big gap between the Democrats and the Republicans this time. But I think that the option of taking 2 years, pinning the Democrats with a lot of things, you know, with a lot of problems, understanding that they probably won't be fighting back, you know, regarding the voting, and also letting the Democratic Party fight itself regarding, well, exactly where are they on issues such as war. I think that's not such a bad strategy, quite frankly. Now, I'm not saying that every single state, you know, allowed itself, the Republican Party allowed itself to somehow lose. I mean, there were tricks after tricks and, you know, really bad cases that happened. But we didn't see the overall level of, you know, voting machines turning in really, really strange results that we did in 2004. And what was interesting is that the Republicans who lost this time didn't demand a recount, you know, when they lost by, you know, relatively small amounts.
Not a peep.
I beg your pardon?
Not a peep. I didn't hear, yeah. I didn't hear any complaining to speak of at all.
Hey. Yeah, so for me, this is also another thing. Well, what's going on there? In 2004, they were kicking and screaming. This time, did not demand a recount. So what I really, the point of my article is that I think that we, the Democratic Party, and indeed, you know, every single American, it doesn't need to get paranoid, but should, you know, consider in the back of their minds that if this is a setup, then what can we do now to make things better in 2008? And one of the things that obviously I think we need to look into the voting integrity, but another thing that I mentioned in the article is I would love to see investigations just across the board into all of the wrongdoings that the Bush administration has done. Get some of this dirt out in the air and then pin it on the people who did it. Pin it on the Bush administration and, you know, announce this to the American people. So that way at least the Democrats won't be blamed for some of these things.
Yes, I agree with that. Let me see if we've got some callers on the line. Let me see if one of them's got a question. Hi, do you have a question for Heather?
Yes, I do. This is Dave in Northern California.
Hi, Dave. Heather, are we all hooked up? You can hear Dave and all?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay.
Because it's real hard to hear her on the phone, but I want to give you one site, both of you and anybody that's listening. ElectionDefenseAlliance.org. Conclusive proof Democrats would have had the most overwhelming landslide victory ever, but for these damn machines and the tricks. You were wondering the other day, and you were going to try to get a hold of Clint Curtis guy. Clint is not resigning. He's not conceding. He is going to call for an investigation of the whole Florida election fraud. So there's still hope.
Do you have a question for Heather?
If you're aware of that, dear, this site, do you know they were comparing the...
I'm very much aware of that. Actually, yeah, I thought that was very interesting. So that they said that, in fact, quite frankly, I was reading this maybe 3 minutes before I got on here. They talked about the huge gap that took place, and they blamed the exit polls because the data was forced in the same way that it was in 2004. And what they said is that this time the discrepancy entailed at least 3 million votes. And so I believe this is a very important report. And again, I'll repeat, it's electiondefensealliance.org. They have a press release and they have exit poll data and a report. And yeah, I mean, thank you for mentioning that, Dave. I believe this is very important information.
Shouldn't it be in the news media all over the place? This is a big ripoff of defrauding the public of the United States. And it should be getting some coverage.
Yeah, the only problem is that this Edison-Matovsky media exit poll is paid for by the media. And this is the problem, because it forces the data to make it look, you know, correct, I guess you could say, in quotes. And so I think that they wouldn't actually be criticizing their own data that they paid for, but of course it should. Of course it should, definitely.
Thank you, Dave. Good to hear from you.
Thank you, both of you.
Good question. Yeah, that was Dave from California. We have quite a few people on as listeners who are very concerned about that. And I'm sure, Heather, you may be well aware of Clint Curtis that ran for Congress here in Florida that blew the whistle on some hanky-panky by Tom Feeney in Congress trying to rig elections here in Florida. So we'll keep an eye on that one. We'll have to keep an eye on that one. I am concerned about, you mentioned before Dave called, that about investigations.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in favor of comprehensive investigations across the board. And I don't want it to make it look like a persecution, but I'm a bit concerned with the leadership right now. Harry Reid's made the statement that he's not heavily into investigations, and then added that that should be way down at the bottom of our agenda. And while I think statesmanship should be at the top and we should get things done that need to be done, I don't think it should be near the bottom. So I'm not sure we can count on the Senate to do anything for us in any investigations. The House is another story. Nancy might be feigning like she doesn't want to necessarily do any investigations, but I think she's perfectly willing to let the people ahead of the committees go ahead and do some. What do you think?
Well, I would have to agree with you, and I wasn't surprised, but I was appalled when Harry Reid said that, and he said that before the vote. I mean, it was just so deeply inappropriate. But I think that for one thing that they can do, you know, they can investigation subpoenas, but what they can also do is get some of these secret administration documents. And I believe even Harry Reid is supporting at least some of that. And so at least that would shed some light on what has been going on, you know, behind the scenes. But I would think at the very least we need to absolutely look at, you know, the crime that was the Military Commissions Act that was passed, Patriot Act, other things that really absolutely need to be addressed immediately. And I'm hoping that there is, you know, some kind of stomach within both the House and the Senate to look at these critical issues. But you know what? Again, this is a democracy. If the people who are listening and, you know, their friends and what have you send their senators and their representatives their ideas and their complaints and their comments, you know, it's got to help. I mean, these people are working for us.
Heather, I'd like for you to, we're about out of time here. I wondered if you'd take a moment or so, as long as you need, as a matter of fact, and tell us about your site and what's your purpose and your affiliations and all that. What are you after here with this? And by the way, I'd encourage everybody to go to your site, so have your pencil ready to write this down.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, you know, actually, I started writing opinion pieces basically when Bush came into office, because I just got so angry about many of the things that were going on, and it's just exploded in the past, you know, many years. And the latest is that I just released two books. They're called The Progressive Handbook, Get the Facts and Make a Difference Now, Volume 1 and Volume 2, and they cover everything from, there's a whole chapter on elections and voting and the threats to the integrity, but they also cover things like the environment and foreign policy. But the reason that I wrote these, and now what I do in my articles, is that I was getting so many letters from readers saying, you know, it's hopeless. There is nothing that I can do. I'm just going to give up. And that made me so, so sad, you know, because in a democracy, as soon as that happens, then they have won. And so the point of these, of the Progressive's handbooks and also my articles now, is I break the bad news, but then at the end say, okay, and here's some action ideas. Here is stuff that you can do today to make the situation better. And so if there's anything, I guess you could say is my little calling card, that would be it. And so, for example, if you come to my site, and I would invite you to do it, and it's www.heatherwokush.com. And at the end of every article, it gives you examples of things that you can do related to that topic. And on the, you can also click and go to the book's website, which is called The Progressive's Handbook. If you click and go there, there's this entire action center that talks about, you know, inspiring people and different things that you can do to make the world better and what have you. So this is what I'm really trying to promote right now, to inspire us to stand up and fight and take America back.
Well, Heather, I completely agree with you, and I'm still euphoric over having taken back the House and the Senate, but now is not the time, and I know after reading many of your columns there, now is not the time to sit back and say, hey, we won, let's take it easy. That's
right.
That's we've got to be ever vigilant and keep on keeping on with what we've doing before the election. You know, it's natural for a little bit of that zeal to wane right after an election, but I'm pretty sure I know our audience, they're very, very much the activists. So we'll repeat your website several times throughout the broadcast today, and I want to thank you. Where are you calling from today by some chance?
You know, I am calling you from Vienna, Austria.
Oh, well, there's worse places to be.
I beg your pardon?
There's worse places to be. Have you been to the Opera House?
Yeah, I sure am.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, well, we're looking at snow, so I think I could handle your weather right now, actually.
Oh, Vienna. Oh, my.
But listen, thank you very much for the invitation, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks for being on the program.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Heather Walkers, heatherwokush.com. Very, very, very fine writer, and got a great insight to politics. Hey, let's take a quick break now. We'll be right back.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I wanna be just like my president. I wanna make more money than I can spend. I wanna build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Come on, you black and Hispanic boys, we'll keep you poor so you've got no choice but to join the army in your prime and fight for Uncle Sam and die. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century.
Back with you here on the Guy James Show. 8.5 minutes before the hour. 866-546-5254. Give us a call. Give it a whirl. Call in. Let us know what you think about anything we're talking about today. Or if you want to talk about how to bake a cherry pie, we'll let you do that today. It is Thanksgiving week, after all. Ah, yes. Welcome to the Guy James Show. 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you today. We're going to have, at the top of the hour, right after the news, we're going to have Dave McMichael on with us. He's a former CIA analyst. Going to talk to us about this Iranian war problem. I say Iranian war. Do you think it'll happen? I wonder how many of you have noticed how much the media's beaten the drum against Iran lately. Last week we had Israeli Prime Minister Omer and others in the Israeli government visiting here, and I see Netanyahu has been all over TV lately, and they took every opportunity to talk about how much they need to start a war with Iran. Now, like many of you, I'm not a big fan of Iran's president, Ahmadinejad, but he has, and he's really been out of line with some of his rhetoric against Israel. His government is responsible for a lot of human rights abuses, and they've got no free press. And basically, Iran's not a free country, but rather it's a theocracy. But last week's news coverage was over the top, and just as it was back in late 2002 and 2003 when they were constantly showing us what a mushroom cloud looked like, you remember that? The media went on and on and on every day talking about how dangerous Saddam was at the time, and right now they're going on and on every day about how dangerous Ahmadinejad is. Sounds familiar, doesn't it, the whole thing? Ahmadinejad's regime may or may not be developing nuclear weapons, but I don't trust anyone who says that the world will be made safer by dropping bombs on their enemies' weapons facilities. Netanyahu's starting to talk like that, and he may well be back in their government soon, and I don't trust the guy. I don't trust the guy one bit. Israel's done this time and time again, and the end result's always dead civilians that they regret. You know, the children of these dead civilians make great future terrorists. And I also don't trust anybody who says that another nation should be wiped off the map. Now, whether Ahmadinejad was just playing to his base or not with that speech, his words have to be taken seriously, and I don't take either side in this conflict. I think that the two countries are equally criminal in pushing the world close to some sort of a devastating war. I really do. They both share blame. But what I want to see is peace. So let me play the devil's advocate for a moment and ask an important question here. Why would Iran want to build a nuclear bomb? It's an easy answer to this question. The answer is not because they're evil. Let's put ourselves in Ahmadinejad's shoes for a moment and consider the following. George Bush's axis of evil speech and his subsequent invasion of Iraq, but not North Korea. All of that has taught the world an important lesson. And if you have a nuclear weapon, the United States will not invade you. Why do you think there's been no action taken against Pakistan, the likely home of Osama bin Laden and other al-Qaeda leaders? The U.S. has got a long history of interfering in Iran's affairs. It was either, I can't remember the year for sure, it was 1952 or 1953, right along in there, that the U.S. orchestrated the overthrow of Iran's democratically elected Prime Minister, Mossadegh. Our government, instituted a coup d'etat, replacing Mossadegh with him, replacing with a brutal but pro-U.S. dictator they called the Shah. And later, when Iran was at war with Iraq, the U.S. armed Saddam Hussein with WMDs. And at the time, the U.S. knew that Saddam Hussein has used chemical weapons against the Kurds in northern Iraq. And Donald Rumsfeld's sales calls, remember that picture? It was essentially a green light for Saddam Hussein to use those WMDs against Iranian troops. Israel's got nuclear weapons. Israel also has a proven track record of violence against its neighbors. And I heard the interview where former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, he talked with that fascist radio host Glenn Beck about their shared desire, if you will, to see a war that would result in the deaths of millions of Muslims. And Netanyahu has to be taken seriously. He's still a major player in Israeli politics. And given the almost totally unstable nature of the coalition governments that characterize the Knesset, it might only be a matter of time until he's the prime minister once again. So again, I ask, what would you do if you were in Ahmadinejad's shoes? Really, it's a no-brainer. You'd do anything and everything you could to build, steal, or buy a nuclear weapon, so you could use it as a deterrent against the perceived threat of Israel and the United States, the very real threats. This is Iran's reality. And we in the West have to do more to understand our enemies. We didn't understand the Iraqis at all. And they weren't even our enemies, but we didn't understand them when we did that raid in there, started that war in there. You know, talking to them, it would be a great first step. We got to understand why Iran does what it does. Simply saying their leader's evil, insane, doesn't do anything to help anyone but the defense contractors who are getting rich off this whole mess. It's too risky to let the present rhetoric continue to build to the point where war becomes inevitable. Somebody's got to stand up and engage in some serious diplomacy. Luckily for everyone, there may be motivation for powerful people in the United States to do this. These days of an all-volunteer U.S. military, where only the poor get killed, might be coming to an end. We'll see how that comes out. But I just wonder how enthusiastic the corporate leaders and the U.S. government officials and the warmongering media types will be to have their children take turns getting killed while defending an oil pipeline in Iraq or Iran or wherever. How do you feel about going over there yourself? Somebody doesn't stand up pretty soon, it's going to be a lot of people's future in this country. Because if we do invade Iran, the Republicans will even be calling for a draft. No, we can't go on like this. We can't keep it up. There's got to be some sanity brought to government. That's why we went to the polls a couple of weeks ago. And that is what we expect from our Democratic leaders now. We don't expect them to sit around and say, oh, well, we'll wait for this, and oh, well, we'll wait for that. No, we need immediate action on this problem. I hope that it is at the forefront of everything they're talking about right now, because it's the number one problem we have. Yes, we've got our economy to work on. Yes, we've got health care to work on. Yes, we've got many, many things to work on right within the borders of this country. But the number one problem in this country right now is the war with Iraq and a possible invasion of Iran or bombing of Iran. We've got to take care of this. These newly elected Democrats and the Democratic leadership have got to get serious. They've got to get real serious with it. If they don't, I'm going to be damn disappointed, I can tell you that right now. We're going to take a break for news at the top of the hour. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Don't go away.
This is the Quality News Network. The symbol of the Christian minority in Lebanon has been assassinated. Pierre Jamal was a cabinet minister and supporter of the anti-Syrian parliamentary majority, which is struggling for power with pro-Syrian groups led by Hezbollah. He was killed today by gunmen who attacked his convoy as it was driving through a Beirut neighborhood. His supporters blame Syria, but the Syrian government has issued a statement condemning his death. The U.S. is also denouncing the assassination, calling it an act of terrorism designed to intimidate anti-Syrian forces. The U.S. government also is calling it a sad day for Lebanon. For the first time since 1982, Iraq has resumed diplomatic ties with Syria following an overture from Damascus. In addition, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has invited both Syrian and Iraqi presidents to meet with him this weekend in Tehran to talk about the escalating violence in Iraq. Syria's president has declined the invitation, but Iraqi President Jalal Talabani will attend. In Iraq, sectarian violence continues. Iraq's defense minister now saying that the country is in a state of war, with nearly 1,500 Iraqis having been killed so far this month. An Israeli group called Peace Now, which is opposed to settlement building, says that a study of records from Israel's civil administration shows that about 40% of the Jewish settlements in the occupied West Bank were built on land owned by Palestinians. The Israeli government has long maintained that no private property was seized for settlement building. A top U.S. negotiator says that six-party talks about dismantling North Korea's nuclear program may take place in mid-December. Fire officials in Guatemala now say that it was a lit cigarette that started an enormous blaze at Central America's biggest open-air market yesterday, killing 15 people. The fire began near an illegal fireworks stand and quickly engulfed 40 shops. A fourth student has now died from yesterday's high school bus crash near Huntsville, Alabama. 13 students and the bus driver remain hospitalized. The National Transportation Safety Board is looking at the possibility that a car driven by a teen cut the bus off, causing it to go through an overpass guardrail and fall 30 feet to the highway below. Controversial book by O.J. Simpson about his wife's murder and a TV special about that book have been canceled. Rupert Murdoch, who owns the company that would have produced both, says he agrees with the American public that it was an ill-considered project. New York Times says that although Senator Hillary Clinton had little competition in a re-election bid this month, she spent more than any other senatorial candidate, $30 million. And the legendary film director Robert Altman, who earlier this year received an honorary Oscar for Lifetime Achievement, has died in L.A. at the age of 81. This is QNN.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
A new United Nations report says that nearly 40 million people around the world are infected with HIV, 63% of them in Africa, but the report notes that it is spreading in East and Central Asia as well as Eastern Europe. The president's choice to head the nation's family planning unit is coming under fire from some Democratic leaders who say that Dr. Eric Kerouac is the wrong man for the job because he's a known opponent of both birth control and abortion. For the first time, Google's stock passed the $500 mark today on the NASDAQ stock market. Korean Air has placed a $5.5 billion order with Boeing for 25 passenger and cargo jets. China and India have decided that there's room enough in the world for both of them to become global giants, so they've announced a plan to double trade between their two countries over the next 4 years to $40 billion, up from practically nothing 2 decades ago. John Deere reports a 19% rise in its fourth quarter earnings, but the farm and lawn care equipment maker also says that it expects a sales slowdown during the next fiscal year. And a Wall Street Journal survey of economists finds that the worst is over for the U.S. housing market slowdown, though they're still predicting that the average selling price will fall a bit next year, probably by about 0.5%. Lightspeed crude is up $1.10 this hour, trading at $59.90 a barrel. All the markets are higher on Wall Street. The Dow is now up 21 points at 12,336. NASDAQ is up 3 at 2455. And the S&P 500 is also up 3 points at 1,403. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. The time is now 5 minutes past the hour.
what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Glad to have all of you along with us here this afternoon. And let's not beat around the bush. Let's get right to it. I promise you another great guest today, a gentleman that's been on the program a couple of times before. You know, if you're wanting to talk about foreign affairs, if you're wanting to talk about Iran, that sort of thing, here's one of the guys you talk to about it. It's Dave McMichael. Dave, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me back, Guy.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. We poor laymen out here in the countryside, you know, we don't have an...
You do protest too much.
Well, you know, we've never been over in the... all of a sudden it escapes me. What do they call the place there at the CIA?
Langley.
Yeah, Langley, and what is they talk about? Oh, well, never mind. I'll never think of that cute little nickname I was thinking of. Doesn't matter. I've always said if I could be a little fly on the wall, if there's any place in the world I could probably go for a little bit, I'd like to spend the day inside the CIA wherever I wanted to go and find out whatever I wanted to find out. Would I come out of there absolutely shocked at things I'd found out?
Well, it depends on what wall you sat.
Now, I remember I said I want unlimited access. I want to find out, I want to see, hear and see anything I want to know. I got a feeling I'd be impressed if nothing else. Dave, you spent a good amount of time at the CIA, right?
Mm-hmm.
You are part of the group. Ray McGovern's part of it as well, right?
That's correct.
Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity.
That is true.
And you've been preaching sanity for the past few years, and I don't think we've gotten any more sane. I'm not exactly sure that we have. I mean the leaders of our government. Here we are once again, right back to where we were at the beginning of 2002 or so, talking about another invasion of another country. And frankly, it scares hell out of me. Do you think this is how serious of an issue is this with Iran? We're starting to hear the drumbeats a lot.
Well, first of all, it is serious, and it's been continuing for some time. As you and your listeners recall, at the time we were going into Iraq, Iran had already been named part of the Axis of Evil. And thus seemed to be on the short list for similar action. Even before that, though, we go back to 1998 when a vast bipartisan majority in the United States Congress passed the regime change resolution on Iran, declaring Iran a totally unsatisfactory, under its current government, a totally unsatisfactory member of the Community of Nations, and authorized the President of the United States to take actions that would advance, let us say, a change of government in that country. And at the present time, under the auspices of all things, the National Institute for Peace, there is a funded United States program to carry on those activities, and also under the equally strangely named National Endowment for Democracy, monies have been set aside and to fund groups which are devoted to changing the current government in Iran, which I might note was elected last year by a considerable majority there. But yeah, so that's it's something, and the whole matter has been treated at least for the last year or longer as a crisis situation because, as charged by our let us say, outspoken ambassador to the United States Nations, Mr. John Bolton, and held by the United States government as a truth. Iran is supposed to be actively developing a nuclear weapon in violation of its commitments under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty.
Well, Dave, let me ask you, this idea that we have the right or obligation, however they put it, to go in and change regimes in Iran, Iraq, or wherever the hell else we feel like it, is that an idea that permeates the CIA, the White House, the Pentagon, the government of the United States by and large? Is that the general thinking?
Well, in theory, of course, since you ask about the CIA, the CIA does not, of course, advance policy, but it does carry it out. And very pertinently in this case, if we go back to ancient times, that is 1953, we see that one of the first triumphant covert actions of the Central Intelligence Agency was to organize a movement which succeeded in overthrowing the then-elected Iranian government under Mohammad Mossadegh and restoring the Shah of Iran to his throne, on which he sat until a popular revolution overthrew him in 1978, setting off what some of you all may remember as the Iran hostage crisis. So, and from that perspective, yeah, it comes close to being an act of war, a casus belli, if you will, for one government to declare that it is committed to the overthrow of another government. Unfortunately, the United States has made something of a habit of doing that in recent years, not merely covertly undertaking activities, you know, designed to change the political situation in another country, but to announce openly that it is doing so. I think your listeners could easily predict the reaction in the United States government were some other government to declare that that was its policy toward us.
Hmm. Well, you know, I was talking before the break. The reasoning, for example, that Ahmadinejad is the government there is pushing, we think, pushing for a nuclear weapon. Is it because they're bad guys, or is it because they've seen the rest of the world situation here where we invaded Iraq because they didn't have WMDs and didn't do anything about North Korea because we think they do?
Yeah, well, that's an argument made, but the United States policy toward Iran, especially since the hostage crisis, has been to put, you know, we have had no direct relations with Iran. We impose against Iran, almost total economic sanctions. I think we allow in a few rugs and some caviar from there, but outside of that, we don't, you know, and so Iran is one of those countries, like Cuba, you know, and its government there is marked as a total foe, and there are people in our government in various offices who spend their whole careers figuring out ways to get rid of those governments, and sometimes by measures which are not usual in the conduct of diplomacy or foreign relations.
Mm-hmm. I see that Bush made the statement the other day that he would understand if Israel attacked Iran. Wouldn't it be worse if Israel attacked them than we did, perhaps, to take out any nuclear facilities?
Well, we know that President Bush is an understanding sort of person. But whether Iran, which makes really ferocious statements in this regard, has the capacity to repeat the action it took against the Iraqi nuclear reactor back in 1981, a facility that was being constructed with French assistance, by the way, and bombed that thing to smithereens. Whether they have the capacity to undertake actions, that are, successful, let's say, military actions against Iran, through airstrikes on its facilities, you know, can be questioned. Iran is a country, as you know, of about 80-some millions of people, relatively advanced technologically and militarily. And the facilities, which are the object of interest, by all accounts, are very heavily protected. And so while there's no doubt that Israel could carry out airstrikes, you know, and fairly devastating ones against Iran, Iran has very strong missile capabilities and other capabilities, so this would not be a risk-free operation for the Israelis, and whether they would do it or not depends on, you know, just how insane you think their government is.
Well, aren't they armed in, as far as making airstrikes? Aren't they armed just as well as we are?
We provide the Israeli with the most up-to-date of our aircraft and munitions, as could be seen during this recent dust-up in Lebanon, you know, where the Israelis are right now more or less apologizing for the, you know, heavy use of American-supplied cluster bombs in the country. So, they can do this, but as I say, Iran is a very large country, both territorially and with its population, and has a very considerable military capability of its own. So whether Israel would want to risk doing this is to me rather doubtful.
Does Iran actually have the military capability to shut down the Straits of Hormuz and keep, I forget what the percentage is, but a very high percentage of the oil from getting...
Oil that comes through there, you know, whether they could or whether they would in event of an attack want to do that is questionable. During the 1980s, in the war with Iraq, during which, by the way, the United States and Great Britain in particular not only provided Iraq with the majority of their supplies, including the materials that they used to manufacture some of their weapons of mass destruction, particularly chemical weapons, the Iranians did in fact make attempts to block and fairly successful ones to block Iraqi oil shipments out of the Gulf, and the United States' response to that was to assist in a program of reflagging the tankers that move through there, and also to directly attack Iranian naval units and targets. And of course, this all culminated in a very unfortunate incident in which the USS Vincennes, operating, as we admitted, within Iranian waters, mistakenly shot down an Iranian civil airliner with the loss of several hundred lives, a point which still rankles, by the way, in terms of the relations between the U.S. and Iran. So all I'm saying is that Iran has a fairly significant inshore naval capacity. They have missile batteries, which are quite modern, and whether and Israel certainly couldn't do a hell of a whole lot about that by itself, but the United States, as you know, is operating a large naval task force in the Gulf, even as we speak.
Yes.
And if it came down to that, there's no question in my mind that whatever conventional naval forces that the Iranians put out would not last very long. But then, you know, we go to what we now refer to as asymmetrical warfare, and we see what happens.
Yes. I think we may have someone has a question. You have a question for Dave?
I do. Hi, Guy. Great conversation, you guys. I'm just wondering, by the standards set by the Bush administration in invading Iraq, wouldn't Iran at this point have the same right to maybe lob a tactical nuke over a carrier strike force in the area or something, because they feel that they are directly under threat?
Yeah, well, if, you know, if they had a tactical nuke, which they don't, you know, they probably could use it. This gets down to a very gummy question, let me put it this way, in terms of the use of weapons prohibited under international law. And Iraq faced this, by the way, in the mid-'80s during the war with Iran. They had launched their attack, they say, with the certainly with the support and assistance of the United States and Great Britain, on the assumption that post-Shah Iran's military had been so weakened that it would be, in a now famous phrase, a cakewalk, right? Well, it didn't turn out that way. The Iranians rallied and, in fact, were reinvading Iraq. And it was at that point that the Iraqis used these famous chemical weapons, and particularly this one area where Saddam Hussein has now been convicted for using them there. But the question that always comes up in these situations, even when you have signed a treaty pledging that you will not use these weapons, and you do go into a war, well, suppose you find yourself losing, and you say to yourself, well, I'm going to lose, I'm going to be occupied, I'm going to be defeated if I don't use these weapons. What choice does the national leader make? Good question, I think.
Yeah, yeah, good question. Hey, thank you for your call. Dave, we're not able to put out the fire in Iraq right now. That's very obvious.
We seem to be heaping fuel upon it.
We do.
Mm-hmm.
Is it not then absolutely absurd to think about broadening the hostilities in the Middle East with some sort of military strikes on Iran?
Well, if you know, this is, assumes that the people who are making these decisions in the United States government are perfectly rational people. And I think we have some grounds to doubt that.
Yes.
And if we put ourselves in a situation where we're in a deep pit, and the have dug ourselves into a deep pit, and the people in control of the situation say, well, we're going to stay the course, which means we're going to dig the pit deeper. I don't think that's rational, but you know, then again, a whole lot of human history is. Not particularly rational, so there is the strong possibility that this will be done. And you have a situation in our country where a Congress has been returned. We know that the Iraq War was the principal issue, that a vast majority of the people of the United States, both in opinion polls and by their voting, says, we want to end this and get out of there, and you people show us a way to do it. And you have a government which says we're going to stay the course. I was frankly very disturbed at the remarks that Mr. Bush made in Hanoi or Ho Chi Minh City, wherever the Asia Pacific Economic Conference was just held, because really rather insultingly to the host government, he said the reason the United States lost the war in Vietnam was that we quit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the Vietnamese rather look at it as they beat us, but,
yeah.
But the point is, in other words, this is a not so very oblique statement saying, I'm not going to quit. I'm going to continue here, and since the president has control of the decision-making machinery, once the Congress, well, because we didn't really authorize him to go forward, but he did, but... and the Congress has made it very clear that they're not going to use the power of the purse, you know, refuse to vote appropriations for this thing, you know.
Why can't they do that, Dave? Why can't they? I don't understand
They can do it, but...
I don't understand why they just don't say, no, we are going to cut it off, and we're not going to endanger our soldiers, our military. There's enough money in the pipeline now to bring everybody home safely and all.
No, this is... I mean, that in itself, to me, is irrational, and why the Congress will not, because these are all supplemental appropriations, and early in the new Congress, the administration, to the best of my knowledge, is going to come forward with a supplemental appropriation asking for $174 billion to continue the operations. Now, this will be a big test for the new Congress, because the old Congress has, you know, almost unanimously voted for each one of these supplemental appropriations in the neighborhood of $60, $70, and $80 billion, which have been asked for each time. And whether they are prepared to assume their constitutional duty of doing this is, you know, is questionable. And the question that the way in which you put it is precisely explains why they won't. Well, we don't want to be seen as, you know, denying the troops while they're in the field. Well, I don't think we have time really to discuss the irrationality of that response, but
no.
A lot of politics is not entirely rational, as I think you may know.
Well, and speaking of rationality, before we go, I've watched, you know, I watch C-SPAN. I try and keep up on everything I can on this situation, and we've got some of the same cast of characters. We've got your Bill Kristols and your Richard Pearl and your Douglas Feith and these all the same folks that were out there pounding the drums to go into Iraq, the same folks that should be able to see that it's a miserable failure. Here they are beating the drums again to go after Iran. And it's, again, I guess it's the rationality thing you talked about.
Well, I think that's true. But again, you know, many people are brought up to believe and that, you know, if at first you don't succeed, try again. Well, and, you know, there is, again, one of the definitions of insanity is to, you know, in the face of all evidence, to continue to do the things which are, you know, hurting you and damaging you. But, again, this gets to be, you know, very much part of the psychology of war making. You know, you support the home team, you know, and so forth, and you do it. And the Democrats firmly believe that, you know, since 1972, in the Nixon route of the McGovern peace campaign, that if you're seen as, quote-unquote, soft on national security, you will pay. So right now, I think that the decision that's been taken politically, at least from people I talk to, and like you, reading the broad range of press, is that the new Democratic majority is prepared to let the administration, let us say, twist in the wind for the remaining 2 years. In other words, they will let failure go on and not risk proposing any alternative course until, hopefully, they, from their point of view, they take charge of the executive branch as well. For the following 4 years. But in the meantime, body bags and money bags are, you know,
yes,
right there.
Well, I certainly would enjoy seeing someone step forward and say, to hell with the political risk. Let's do what's right. Let's do what's right for our young military people. Let's do what's right for the country, and let's end this insanity. Dave, I want to thank you so much for being on the program. I always enjoy talking to you. You've got such a great insight to, into the things we want to talk about over there.
The wisdom of age.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dave McMichael. Dave, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you for having me. I hope I've helped you.
Bye. You have. Yes, I would like to be a little fly on the wall in the CIA. Dave and Ray McGovern, who've been on the show several times, know the ropes and know full well. And have you thought about that? Have you seen it and just been aghast, as I have, to see the likes of a Douglas Feith and, you know, Bill Kristol, Richard Pearl. Just saw Richard Pearl last night on talking about it. And I thought, my God, how could anybody listen to this man? How could anybody listen to this insanity a moment longer from these clowns who swore we were going into Iraq and do the right thing? Yes, sir, by God, no, they beat the drums. Let's go to war. Saddam this and Saddam that. He's threatening us and threatening that. And now it's Ahmadinejad. They've just changed the names. Oh, God, it drives me crazy. Drives me crazy. We've got a nation of 300 million people here, and we've got a handful of goddamn idiots in Washington, D.C., keeping this insanity going. And I mean it, I swear to God, if the Democrats don't come through, if the Democrats don't come through and demand that this insanity end, they will no longer have me on their side. This crap of, if they keep this going for a couple of years to let the Republicans twist into wind, I don't want to say how bad I'd feel over that. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, you know, I'm just wondering, Ahmadinejad?
Ahmadinejad, yeah.
You think he would even be talking this trash if it hadn't been for Bush's overt behavior against him?
He obviously sees George Bush as exactly what he is, a guy that, as we used to say, and I'm trying to think how to put it politely, his mouth, things come out of his mouth that his ass can't back up, something like that. Obviously, Ahmadinejad sees that in Bush and is taking full advantage of it, I think.
Yeah, I do too. And that, you know, it's to me, it seems like it's just a he was so close to losing power before Bush threw in that Axis of Evil statement.
Yeah,
and you know, if we had left them alone, I don't think they'd be bothering anybody. I mean, they might throw a few insults at Israel, but hey, they've been doing that for centuries.
That's right. That's exactly right. And you know, I saw Netanyahu on C-SPAN the other night, and scared hell out of me hearing him talk. He'd be if it was up to him, they'd be warming up the F-18s right now. I mean, they would. They'd be on runway ready to go and bomb hell out of Iran right now. If it was up to Netanyahu. That guy. But
it's just, you know, we can't afford another war. There's just no way under the sun. And if these American people allow this to happen, or the Democrats allow it to happen, or whoever, it's the death of our country. I just don't see how we can survive. Our economy can't handle it.
You're exactly right, Dave Sarge. It goes right down the list. The blood, the treasure, it's all linked together. And here we have a war in Iraq that was unnecessary, sucking the lifeblood out of this country. And yet, and here we have the Democrats saying, had enough, vote for change. Okay, we did. Now,
yeah, don't forget about Afghanistan.
Yeah. Here we're talking about Afghanistan almost, it's teetering on the brink right now, falling back into the hands of the Taliban.
You know, we got Afghanistan is very similar to Korea, and Iraq's very similar to Vietnam. So we got Vietnam and Korea both going on at the same time, and now they want to start World War III.
You know, when you sit down and think about it, here we are, you and I, and our listeners, and all of us sitting out here with our daily jobs or whatever we do, and we've got these elitists inside the Beltway. Deciding to take our kids to war, deciding to spend our tax money on some harebrained schemes, some harebrained ideas that a few of their intellectual right-wing neocon friends come up with. It's just amazing that we've put up with it. It really is. You'd almost think Washington would be full of people taken to the streets. I just can't get over it.
Well, then, when Pelosi turns up, and I'm not just coming down on her. I'm just saying I disagree with her on this. I'd rather have her than what we had. So, but anyway, when she says that impeachment's off the table,
yeah,
that just encourages these filthy slime to just do more and more. Oh well, they're not going to do anything. And I mean, dang, somebody's got to stand up. I mean, yeah. This got to stop.
I'm hoping, I'm hoping that she's maybe playing some cards, keeping her cards close to the vest, and says that impeachment is off the table. And here's what I think she's thinking. I could be wrong. In fact, I talked to a staffer that told me this, that she said that's off the table, and she means it. But when some of these investigations get going real good and come up with the evidence that they think that they will have, and they are very confident of coming up with some very damning evidence, especially on the war and the prosecution and the fraud and everything else, then she will be able to have a position of strength behind her, and the public will know all of these charges, and then she'll step up and say, hey, we never intended to come out with impeachment, but my God, you see this evidence here, folks, to the American public. You know, you see this evidence. What else can we do?
Well, that's what I'm hoping for, guy. That's what I'm hoping she's going to do. And, you know, I've talked with her and Representative Clyburn's office on Katrina, and they told me I might be subpoenaed.
Well, I hope you are.
Testify. I do too, man, because I gave him one name and said, okay, here's one. Let's see what you do with it. And if you guys handle that name and y'all do something with it, I'll give you everything I got. But before I put it all out there, I want to be sure that you're going to do something with it, because the other names I give them puts them in jeopardy, and I don't want to put no one's butt on the line like that. You know?
Yeah, you're talking about fraud in contractors' fraud and that sort of thing, governmental fraud in the Katrina wake of Katrina.
Well, even the situation where there's one agent, Homeland Security agent, who has used the benefits that people were supposed to get to shut them up. You know, if you don't shut up, if you talk to the press again, you won't get diddly squat, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Stuff
why,
like
why
that.
Why does that not surprise me?
Well, Ray was with us when we found that out, but it's, you know, it's just one of those things where you sit back and you say, my God, what is it going to take? You know, you just so much. By the way, congratulations to your Buckeyes, and you know, we got a pretty big ball game Saturday ourselves.
Who you got Saturday?
We got Marshall.
Oh, yeah.
And if we win the East Division of Conference USA and play Houston in the championship.
The Thundering Herd.
Yep, and I hope we can beat them.
Middle Tennessee State in that?
Oh, no, man. No.
They're in the, what do you call it? I can't think of their conference right now.
MAC.
No, they're not in the MAC.
Middle
Tennessee State. Now I can't think of who they.
We got Tulsa and UTEP and Marshall and all Central Florida and all those guys.
Mm.
Kind of a weak conference this year, though.
The Thundering Herd coming. Yep. They're coming down there.
Yeah, we got them here.
Oh, good, good.
It's going to be carried on CSTV, but seeing how I don't have TV anymore.
Well, maybe I'll get to see some of it. I got to tell you, and I'll tell everybody, if you wanted to see me at my worst, or maybe my best, I'm not sure. Saturday, I was originally going to go home for the game, but I couldn't, and you know, I get strapped in my chair ready for that game Saturday, and I'm a mess. I mean.
Yeah.
Just a mess. You can't imagine.
Now, this is the first year since I was in Germany in the military that I have not enjoyed my college sports, and it's all due to this dang Bush administration. I mean, you can't even. It's like I was listening to the game on radio, and I'd be dang if they didn't have a commercial and that Haley Barbour was on it saying, and we're rebuilding the Mississippi coast, and we're going to have fine casinos.
They're paying for ads for that out of the public money, too, huh?
Yeah. Oh, man, it ruins the game.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, guy, I'm going to let you go, buddy.
Thank you, Sarge.
Bye-bye.
Oh, my. What should we do here? I'm looking. Let's go to a break, okay? We'll be back in just a minute. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Guy James Show. Here we are. We've got about 16 and a half minutes left in the program. I hope you'll want to join us by giving us a call at 866-546-5254. 846-546-5254. I got an email today from a friend of mine, Bob Furtick, over at Democrats.com. And we're talking about this, really, what else can you call it, this debt slavery bankruptcy bill that was enacted by the Republican Congress back in 2005. I'm sure you all remember that one. I swore off a whole bunch of politicians on account of that, and I'm not taking them back either. The new Democratic Congress, if they like, and we'll see if we can separate the men from the boys and girls here, or men and women from the boys and girls, they can rewrite this debt slavery bill. And there's no reason why they can't. And the reason I wanted to remind you of this is Christmas season is coming, or holiday season, or Kwanzaa, or whatever you want to call it, okay? I don't care. I'm not offended by anybody calling it Christmas, Kwanzaa, holiday, Festivus. that's a joke. I know some of you will get and some of you won't. I don't care. I don't care if you tell me Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. It makes no difference to me. I'll know what you mean. I'll know what I'm celebrating. You can celebrate what you want to, and let's just all be friends and have a good time and enjoy the season, okay? If you want to put up a menorah, if you want to put up a Christmas tree, a Festivus tree, or any of that, hey, let's just do it, and let's just get along, and let's not argue about this Christmas thing and all that. I don't care. Really, I don't care. Really. I just want to do my thing, and you can do your thing, and that's the way it ought to be. But getting back to what I want to talk about on this subject is a lot of people are going to be out shopping for gifts. I suspect some fewer people will be out shopping, maybe not fewer, but they'll be spending less this year because I happen to think we've got a tight economy here. And a whole lot of this Christmas or holiday season is going to go on people's credit cards. And there are now about 690 million credit cards. That's, what, 2.5 for every man, woman, and child in the country? 2? I don't know. 2.5. Charging $1.8 trillion on these credit cards. And as Bob was saying, there's a catch. You pay your bills on time each month, but the credit card company can change your interest rate and terms at any time for no reason at all. Did you know that? Did you read the fine print? A lot of these cards are opening up at 6, 7, 5, 6, 7, even 0% can suddenly skyrocket to 30%. And the company can retroactively apply the new rate to charges already made. Did you know that? And as Bob was saying here in his note that he sent, it's always Christmas time for Visa. But there are a few sensible reforms that get rid of the gotchas in these credit cards. And as the new Congress sets its priorities for next year, it's time to make sure that those reforms are near the top of their domestic agenda. We need some credit card protection. These people, in many cases, are absolutely predatory. Absolutely predatory with some of the lending practices that they're using. And, I fault the United States Congress for ever allowing that obscenity of a bill to pass in the first place. It should never even have come to a vote. I see on the chat room overhead on Radio Network chat room, already has somebody asked about Festivus, and I'm not gonna give it away. Someone's gonna have to talk about Festivus. Oh yeah, and Corey Stone reminded us about our good friend Senator Joe Biden helped that credit card bill along. Mr. Jim Davis, congressman from Florida, Democratic congressman who ran for governor of Florida. And yes, I did not, I did not vote for him. I did not vote for Charlie Crist either. I voted for our Reform Party candidate. the only case in which I did that, but I could not. I said I wouldn't, and I will not. I will never vote for anybody that voted for that credit card bill. That was an obscenity. It's as bad a bill as a Democrat could ever vote for, I feel. And again, as long as I'm laying down my my rules here, wouldn't they laugh at me? I will not vote for any candidate who has voted for the Iraq War, who either voted for it or voted for it and has not apologized for it. And I think you know right now that includes a few well-known Democratic people who may become candidates. Some of them voted for it and later said it was the wrong thing to do, admit that they'd made a mistake. Others have stuck to their guns and I think would vote for it again. I could not, in good conscience, vote for any Democrat who still thinks this war was a good idea. Could not, would not, will not. That's easy. All right, on the chat room, Smart Mom says Obama voted for it. Voted for what? Obama didn't vote for the war. Obama voted for the bankruptcy bill. Is that correct? Somebody let me know on there. I'm sure they will very soon. Not sure about that. If so, that would cross him off my list. I mean it. I think I told you how stubborn I am a while back. I haven't drank a Pepsi product in 30 years on account of... Okay. Yeah, I am stubborn. And I'm reading the chat room here. Okay, says, I said I can't vote for Obama. He must have voted for the bankruptcy bill. I didn't know that about him. Well, see, I get my list cut down already. Am I a one-issue voter? No, I've got several issues that I wouldn't vote, the war, the bankruptcy bill, and a few other things. So I'm tough, and I know a lot of you are tough, and we're very demanding, as we should be. Absolutely as we should be. Each and every one of us needs to be tough on our elected officials. And I try not to be a one-issue voter. I don't think I ever would be. But some of them... well, I guess there I said it. I that's one issue that I just can't get past, either one of those, I guess. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Is this the real Guy James?
Yes, the real one.
Hi, Guy. How you doing? This is Eric from Vermont.
Is this the real Eric?
I'm really stressed out. Don't bug me. How you doing?
You're the real Eric? You're not an imposter?
No, that's my brother that's the imposter.
Okay.
He's not here today.
What's on your mind today, Eric?
Bankruptcy. Wow, I'm telling you. I work for an organization, and I can't really say some things because, you know, there are certain confidential and restricted things I can say. But I don't think people are aware, and I'm going to quote Bernie Sanders in a meetup we had probably about a year and a half, maybe last June, and so on and so forth, and it's accurate to my knowledge. There are about 6 billion credit card offers that go out every year in this country, plus. And I am in a situation where I get to see some of that information, and there is just set up, as you said, just to set people up to come in zero APR for 6 months, and then they clunk on everything over on the top into 23%, 24% plus, and so on and so forth. I myself have gotten completely burned on when I had a credit card company that was charging me 9.9. I had an EFT that I used to dunk out of my bank account. They always had my payments promptly, and then out of the clear blue sky, they decided to raise that thing 20 points. And fortunately, I was in a position where I was able to pay the thing off. Unfortunately, there are many people that are not in that position. They have a lot of bills to pay, you know, medical bills because of the medical crisis that we have in this country in terms of people being overcharged for pharmaceutical drugs and yada, yada, yada. Just trying to give you a little support for everything you've probably been talking about already, but I just got home.
Well, I just think that bankruptcy bill and the credit card the problem that we got and all, I think it's just, it's raping the American public. And
it sure is. It's loan sharking.
It is.
It's loan sharking.
Yeah, if you'd have gone into your bank, you know, you remember, I don't know, you're not as old as I am, but say 30 years ago, you walked into your local, Main Street Bank, your little independent bank wherever you live, and you walked in and you knew the president of the bank and everybody in there, and you walked in and sat down and said, I want a loan, because that's how you did it in those days. There weren't any credit card advances or anything, and he asked you for 29% interest. What would we have said? I mean, you know, we'd have called him a loan shark, and we would have walked out. And now that's happening every day, everywhere, to people. You know, it's not uncommon. 29% is not uncommon. And they're doing it arbitrarily, at will. They're doing
it at will, and they can do it anytime they want to, without any reason whatsoever. And they will tell you that if they did the same thing to other people, which I'm sure they do quite frequently, as they did to me. And they can do it for absolutely no reason. They don't need a reason for anything. The unfortunate part is the psychological effect that they push to Americans, and they push to, let's just say Americans, since we're living here. But what they do is they use the psychological concept of buy it now. You need to have this. You know, you can't get this off the internet without a credit card. And they put all these info commercials on, and you buy it now, and you get it there, and you can pay for that there. And I'm not just talking about, you know, people that actually are in financial straits because they're trying to pay off some medical bills, and that's an additional issue on top of it. But the psychological effect that they say, this is a good way to buy something now. You can have it today, and then you can pay for it tomorrow. And we're going to crank our living darlings out on. You can max that thing out, and you'll never get out of Dodge because they've changed the bankruptcy laws, and we're going to make it really difficult. And they got you as a slave.
Well, and they during that bankruptcy thing, they doubled everybody's minimum payments, and even so, on this 29% thing. Someone sent me an example of it the other day. If you had $1,000 on a credit card and made the minimum payment, it'd take you like 9 years to get out from under it. It's nuts. It's really nuts. I don't know. It's a sad testament to the way our society is going right now. People are in hock up to their ears, and I don't think this economy is anywhere near bottomed out. I think by next spring, and I'm no economist, but I read the tea leaves like everybody else does. I say by next spring or summer we're going to be in bad shape in this country financially. I really do believe that, and all the signs are pointing that way. And you know, it's just like always, the people with money will survive, and the average working Joe is the one that's going to get creamed.
But do you think that the Democrats are going to be able to initiate some sort of re-look, or
repeal, a reworking of it?
Yeah. I mean, same thing they're trying to do with habeas corpus right now, to an extent. I mean, are they going to be able to do something like that, where they have some sort of oversight over the credit card companies as they used to do?
Well, you know, back when
corporate companies would not abuse the American citizens.
It's like back when you were in school and your English teacher told you, when you say, teacher, can I? You said, no, you can, but you may not. I remember my English teacher telling me that so many times. Yes, they can. But the question
says, don't do this. Do that.
But the question is, will they? And I got to be honest with you. I have my doubts.
We're not really optimistic here?
No, I'm not. I'm not about that.
Hey, as far as I'm concerned, I've gotten so cynical that nothing surprises me right now of anything that's going to go on.
No.
We can keep trying to do it. We can keep trying to do it. I'm really pleased at the way the elections turned out. You know, like, for whatever reason, at least hopefully there might be a chance, much more than there was 3 weeks ago, that there might be some sort of oversight, some sort of initiative where somebody sort of says, well, maybe we better start looking at this a little more something. You know, I don't know. You know, only time will tell, but I mean, hopefully, that's, I think, what a lot of us were trying to do over the last, 2 years over this election cycle to get going toward.
You're exactly right. Hey, thanks for calling, Eric. Good to hear from you.
Thanks for being there.
Huh?
You're doing a great job, guy.
Thank you, sir.
I'm sorry I don't get an opportunity to listen to you more.
Well, thanks for calling today. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Love it.
For those of you that are asking about that website again, I got several emails and all of heatherwokush.com. It's Heather, W-O-K-U-S-C-H.com. Okay? be sure and visit that website. A lot of good words on there. Good words. She was a good guest. And, of course, I always enjoy having Dave McMichael on as well. Dave's one of those guys, him and Ray McGovern, just like to sit down with him and have dinner for 4 hours and say, okay, guys, spill your guts. I love those Washington stories. I do. Hey, I want to thank you so much for being with us here on the Guy James Show today. I do really appreciate it very, very much. And I appreciate all the emails that I get from all you folks. I enjoy that as well. Always good to hear from you. And I do want to remind you that this is a listener-supported program, and we could use your help right now, most definitely. It costs money to keep this little operation going, and we appreciate the help we do get, and hope we'll get some help from some assistance from some of you that may not have participated in funding the program. That's about all we have today. I do want to thank you once again for listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Stay tuned all evening for good programming. Don't forget Bob Kincaid coming up. You'll love Bob's show. Want to remind you, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.